small step for man.
CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Herbert R. Tarlick, Chairman.
Welcome to another edition of the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks. My name's Kelly Rayburn for the next hour. And a few more minutes, Michael Rubin will be coming in just a few moments. Right now, I'm going to turn it over to what I did on the interview on Access TV that was happening on, well, the month of December. So I've got the clip that I had for Jordan Bateman, who is the Canadian Taxpayers Association of British Columbia, respective sides. So I'll take it away, and we will be back in a moment. You're tuned in to the Community Living Show. My name's Kelly Rayburn. We will be back in a moment. You're watching Access Television. My name's Kelly Rayburn. We're talking about the 10-year plan that is happening from now and the next 10 years on public transportation. Public transportation started in the 1890s, and it started as streetcar services through SkyTrain and CBus and West Coast Express today. Now, public transit service wants to add in some more services, including some CBus services that extends for 15 minutes 7 days a week and every 10 minutes during peak hours, the extension of more SkyTrain services and the West Coast Express, extension of more B-Line service throughout the region. Now, how much is it going to cost? Well, most of it is all going to be paid for through property taxes and through raising bus fares, transit fares, for that matter. And it also includes an investment of $2 billion through your taxpayers' dollars through the Vancouver region. Gordon Bateman is the Canadian Taxpayer Association of British Columbia. He is here to talk about this. Hi, Jordan.
Hey, thanks for having me, Kelly.
So, during last year's referendum with the No campaign had won its vote, what service has gone since then to today, through today?
Yeah, well, I mean, three major things have changed since the No vote to the sales tax, which, as you recall, was going to fund a major $8 billion plan that the TransLink mayors had. First of all, we voted that down. The public very convincingly said, no, we don't trust TransLink with this new tax. We want to see some better behavior out of them. Second, Justin Trudeau got elected, and Trudeau changed the funding formula, whereas before it was one-third federal, one-third provincial, one-third regional. He now, as the federal government, they pay 50%. So when you add that to the 33% for the province, suddenly that cut what the mayors had to raise in half. But the third thing that happened, and this is the most important, is TransLink actually started to smarten up just a little bit. They found some efficiencies within their system, and $250 million worth of the money that's going towards this $2 billion plan is sales from surplus property and efficiencies, finding money that could be spent in better ways.
Now, Justin Trudeau has come to Vancouver and making promises of getting more public service through the federal government situation. What's happening with the other groups where we have the provincial government as making its promise of getting more investment through TransLink through Vancouver, and of course the investment from the federal government investing through Vancouver? What has happened on that?
Well, Well, it's going to be a big election issue for the provincial election next May, because the NDP have said they'll spend 40%. They'll put in 40% towards this, which would mean the region's share would be reduced even further. The Liberals are sticking at 33%. 7% doesn't sound like a lot when you're just kind of talking off the cuff, but when you're talking about, you know, $5 or $6 billion worth of SkyTrain investments, that's a big difference in money. So that's going on provincially. Regionally, you know, the mayors are part of this plan. There's some of the studies necessary for the subway to Arbutus, for some of the light rail projects in Surrey. We'll wait and see how those all pan out.
I'm the transit rider, and I mostly ride on public transit every single day without a vehicle or any other vehicles. Is private vehicles going to affect on the transit 10-year effect?
Not right off the cuff. Now, they are talking about for the next round of funding, perhaps doing mobility pricing, road pricing, essentially paying a per kilometer fee for driving your car. We're not in favor of that at this point because we already spend about 50 cents a liter in gasoline. So there's some negotiation that still has to happen there, and we have to see what the public, if the public would accept road taxes. I don't think they will, but that'll be that's a fight for another day.
How do they get more information on this, on the tax? On public transit, how they get
information? Come to our website, taxpayer.com, click on the BC section. I write about it quite a bit, obviously. And then you can still see our old campaign website at notranslinktax.ca if there's questions. We have a different plan on how to fund the system there.
All right, thank you very much. I was speaking with Jordan Bateman, who is the director of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. Thank you for watching Access.
All right, so that was the interview that I did with Jordan Bateman on the Canadian Taxpayers Association. All right, so you are tuned into Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks, which is the National Campus and Community Radio Networks Association. I'm going to play you now the Ask Dr. Doreen that happened yesterday on Autism Live. As you heard from previous episodes that we did, we do our issues on Autism Live and what is autism and stuff like that. So Autism Live is a production center of autism-related disorders, that's known as CARD, located on Woodland Hills, California, and their offices are in the United States and around the globe. For more information on the therapy, please visit centerforautismallinoneword.com. And if you want to have an Autism Live free newsletter, you can always cinema website, excuse me. Yeah, so you can send them a website, www.autism-live.com/join-r-email-list.axpx. And you can also check them out on Facebook, facebook.com/autismlive.
I'm so excited that we're getting to more people than ever this morning because we have Dr. Doreen Grampuchet with us, and she is a true expert in the field of autism. I believe the preeminent expert in the field of autism. I was going to say in our time, but really in all time, expert in the field of autism.
I think we're going a little overboard here.
I don't think so at all.
Thank you very much.
I'm the arbitrator of that because I said so. But Dr. Grampuchet has been working in this field for 30 plus years, which you wouldn't know to look at her. But I think sometimes the kids are part of what helps to keep you young and keep all the people who work with in the field of autism young.
Gosh, for sure, and the parents, for sure. No,
well, that didn't rub off on me as an autism parent.
I don't know if you heard this morning, I was reading an email from one of the parents. And, you know, we get so many of these emails, and they're just so touching, and they're just such a breath of fresh air, like, it's not even about, it's just about the effect these therapists have, you know, and I just love that. It's such an amazing thing when you read these emails.
Well,
so touching.
I was thinking about this morning. Now, this is the last show of the year that we have Dr. Grampuchet. See, I'm already going to get weepy. And normally I give you a present in the last show, and it's not done yet. So you're not getting your present today. I'm just letting you know that.
Thank you.
You're going to get it later on in the week or the beginning of next week. But I was thinking all this last couple of weeks about what I really want to get you this holiday season. And what I really want to get you is time. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to give you time. If I could give you a day of my life, and you know how much I love my life and love my little boy, but if I could give you a day of my life, I know you would do amazing things with it, and I would.
That's such an amazing thing to say. Thank you so much.
Well, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart, but I was thinking, but, you know, often, and but not every day, but I'm going to make an effort to make sure that it's every day, you are in my prayers.
Thank you so much.
And I know that you are in so many other autism parents' prayers.
Thank you very
much. Thank you, and we have so much gratitude for you for the things that you do and that
you
have been doing for decades, helping all kinds of individuals
on
the spectrum.
You're going to make me all emotional.
No, see, I'm all on
air.
It's that thing. I'm already crying today. But we do appreciate you. And I want for people who don't know you to know that you have been working in this field for more than 30 years, ranging from very small babies up through senior citizens on the autism spectrum, helping them to find their way. To be able to do the things that are important to them, that you look at each individual and help each individual. And that in and of itself is miraculous. But you also are better than anybody else I know at being able, perspective taking is really one of your many, many talents, and teaching. You're an amazing teacher. You've been able
Thank
to
you.
Take what you know and give it to others, which is one of the great, great gifts to us. That you have a legacy of people who now know how to give this to other people, but you take care of the families. You see the individual, you take care of them as a whole person, and you take care of the families. And you are a visionary who has seen what's coming down the path. And there is no better time that we need someone like you than right now.
Thank you so much. I
Thank
appreciate
you.
It. But, you know, I have to say, I've had kind of a very... I feel like yesterday I was out at UCLA. I was trying to talk to UCLA psychology department to try to see if we can start a behavioral psych program there, which we can't, unfortunately, right now. And it was kind of a very melancholy visit because I was told that they're shutting down the psychology building for a few years for seismic renovations. Mm. But when I was there, and of course I can't go to UCLA without going to the fifth floor where I studied for 12 years, and I went up there and I was just thinking to myself, like, oh my gosh, you know, when I started the studying of autism and when I started working in autism in 1978, I went up to the fifth floor where there were several rooms there and are all of our offices, and Lovas's office and my office and so on, and then one of the offices right next to his was a room that in the 70s had a electric grid floor, and then later on, of course, they came and covered it with wood and carpet and stuff. But that room was one of the rooms where the original research was done to try to teach attachment behavior, because many, many, many years ago in the 60s, when they first started experimenting with behavioral technology techniques and autism, and people have to understand that autism looked incredibly different back in the 60s. It was a much, much more severe type of disorder than it is now. But one of the things that they used to do was, this was pre my time, was that parents would stand on one side of the room on a platform, and then the child was on this electric floor, and the electricity would turn on. It was a very mild electrical thing. We experimented with it later ourselves, but it would tickle your feet, kind of make you uncomfortable. You would run to the platform, and this taught you to go to the parent for relief, basically, and it taught attachment behavior. It sounds a lot more horrible when I say than what it actually was, because when you think of electricity, everybody thinks like, whoa, that's scary. But really, when it's a very mild amount, it just feels like kind of a little tickle.
Okay.
But I was there and I thought to myself, oh my God, how far have we come?
Yes.
That's where I was trying to go with this, because later, that once when I started there in the late 70s, we of course had the whole room redone, covered, and then that room became our studio, which was very similar to this, but it wasn't a filming studio. It was like that room, the production room, and there was a massive, I assume now it was an AVID thing, and we had these film producers who were there helping produce the 1987 recovery video, and I worked a lot on that video with them, which, you know, shows a lot of children before and after intervention.
Yes.
And, you know, so I stood there at the door of that room, and I thought to myself, you know, all the different things that we used that room for. Then later on, I used it for my doctoral dissertation studies, like when I had subjects coming in there, participants, and all these thoughts. And then I thought, okay, and then I left UCLA in 1990 and started CARD, and then all the things we've learned since then, and like where we started, honestly, Shannon, it's like a completely different program than what it was in 1990, even, because, you know, every year that goes by, you learn something new.
Yeah.
And then I came home and I started telling my daughter, Nikki, who you know is very involved with psychology now, and I started talking to her about it, and she always gives me these things to think about, and she's working on a lit review for one of our staff here, and I was like, what's the lit review about? And she was like, well, it's about the fact that functional behavior assessments should be different for kids with autism because kids with autism don't react the same to social attention, right? So obviously we should be looking at their motivation for attention-seeking behavior as somewhat different.
Right.
And I thought, wow, that's an amazing study, right? I think it's actually Esther's study. I'm not sure whose study it is, but I thought to myself, and this was probably the last thing she said to me last night, and I thought, like, the number of people, and earlier in the day I had gone to visit her in our metabolomics lab where they're actually, you know, doing things on children's feces and like trying to...
The poop study, as I fondly refer to it.
And I thought to myself, like, it's unbelievable how far we've come and how many things we still have to learn.
Yes.
We still have to learn because you cannot in any way assume that you've, you know, what we're doing at CARD, and this mom's email today brought all this back for me today because she said, she was just saying how great we are in Orange County where she is. And I was thinking, you know, honestly, the spirit and the energy and the wonderfulness of all of our CARD staff just flows through to some of our children and the families, and it's so beautiful. But I just wish that I had the energy that I had 30, 40 years ago, because I wish that I could just learn more and I could help more families, because there are still so many families where the best we can do is to help maintain and help reduce challenging behavior. But we can't, we still to this day are not recovering all of our kids, obviously. And so that means there's something we still don't know.
Yes.
There's so much we still don't know about autism. And my hope and wish is that, you know, and I'll be in this field for a long time to come, but I hope that by the time the next decade, I hope that we all can learn much more about how our kids process the world, what are the best things we can do for them before birth, at a very young age, during adulthood, you know, throughout their lifespan. What can we do to help them better? And that's truly my wish to God for this season.
Absolutely really. Wonderful and lovely to hear. But I, as I was saying before, there's so many things that are wonderful about you. But truly, at the heart of what's wonderful about you is that you have not had an ego about this.
Oh,
But you know, but honestly, that's a huge gift to our community that you've not had an ego about it, because you have taken what you know and you have disseminated to others, and you have found, when you have seen some, and I've watched you do this, when you see somebody who has talent, you have said, run. You go find out what you know about that and come back and tell all of us and given them a platform with which to do that.
Absolutely.
But everybody, I mean, I get goosebumps when I think about this. Everybody wouldn't be like that. I have watched you when you have said, we know things, let's share it.
Oh, yeah.
And people have said to you, oh, you want to be cautious about that? You have said, no, no, no.
Okay, so we're going to have to leave it there. And of course, you can find out more information on Autism Live at www.autism-live.com and, of course, centerforautism.com. You're tuned into the Community Living Show. Michael Rubin's here We will be back on stations on the NCRE Radio Network. So stations, we will be back in just a moment.
The Global Accessibility Awareness Day is on the third Thursday of May of every year. The community and campus stations across Canada are hosting inclusive radio about accessibility, self-advocacy, adapted technology, and more. Contact your local stations to find out more.
Become a CITR member and make some new friends.
Members get discounts downtown at Little Sisters Book and Art Emporium, the Cinematheque, the Fall Tattooing, Selectors Records, Community Thrift and Vintage, Vinyl Records, Sakura's, Classical Records, and Beat Street Records.
What would we do without our friends?
Hey, it's Cynthia from the Bike Kitchen. We moved, but we are still nearby. The Bike Kitchen is now located on East Mall in the trailer between Irving, Cape Barber, and Brock Hall. Come down and check out our selection of used bikes, work on your bike with our tools, or get a tune-up by one of our pro mechanics. We have a 1 or 2 day turnaround on all tune-ups. Check out our website, thebikekitchen.com, for more information about our services and prices.
This is the Community Living Show on the NCRE Radio Networks. Both are Vancouver stations, Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, and CITR 101.9 FM. Michael, welcome.
I made it.
You made it, yes.
Yeah, so a few weeks ago, I guess it was in November, there was an accessibility legislation assembly with Minister of Sports and Persons with Disability, Carla Qualtrough.
Okay.
And I made it there, and I was able to stay for an hour before I had to run out to another event with our friends from Animal Voices from Office CFRO.
Okay.
And they were having another kind of a protest sort of thing, the assembly was for new accessibility legislation for disabilities, and they were trying to gather information, and I recorded some of the statements that people were making that they wanted to have added into the legislation. So here's the overall goal of what they wanted to accomplish. The overall goal of the legislation is to increase the inclusion and participation of Canadians in society and to promote equality of opportunity by improving accessibility and removing barriers in areas of federal jurisdiction.
Mm.
So more inclusion is a good thing, right?
I
was able to compile some recordings. There's a young lady in there. She makes a statement about autism. I do agree with her that autism isn't something that should be cured. It's just something that we should learn to, that's just part of that person's personality, deal with it that way rather than, and if there's like a learning curve or something like that, give them the resources that they need to, to be successful in life, right?
Cool.
So that sort of thing. And it's kind of disturbing to be hearing that, we want to cure autism.
Right. You heard it on Ask Dr. The doctor on the Autism Live that, several years ago, they did the effective on electricity was such a thing, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So anyway.
All right. So we're going to play you the clip. This is the accessibility legislation with Carla
Carla Qualtrough.
Okay.
Yeah, so. That's a hard name to pronounce.
All right. So we will be back in a moment.
Wow, that was great. 1 second to spare. Okay, number 13.
Hi, Mr. Guy, can you hear me? No? No. Okay, there, now it's on. See? The hardest part, when I had an inducted here 11 years ago. I had a stroke, and I didn't know what's going to happen, and I ended up in the Burgundy Hospital, and I couldn't speak. I couldn't move. I couldn't. My right side was all gone. I thought it was gonna. That was it. I didn't think it was going to happen anymore. And the results was I pushed myself to get a little bit better, to get be able to speak, to get some words out. And so what I have is what they call aphasia. So when you look at the picture, like people who had strokes, there's a third people who had strokes. The third amount of people that had strokes, they're okay. But unfortunately, I have aphasia, so it's hard to get the words out. So it takes me a long. So it's hard to get using my words out. With my speech is okay, but sometimes it's hard to get the numbers. Like you get your phone number, and everybody wants to really, you know, you go 1, 2. What's your phone number? 604-536. It goes too fast. So there's simple things like every bank in the country or anything. There's all these automatic things that you can just slow it down. So make it simple things, slow it down a little bit. So then you can understand. Excuse me, you're going to your druggist. Your druggist. You want to get. Excuse me. We have this little badge that's right here. We're trying to encompass ourselves I'm losing my train of thought. So that's not another problem with the aphasia part. So anyway, I just want to make sure that we're working together to expand our horizons, especially with the aphasia, stuff at the University of British Columbia. And in British Columbia, we're doing a lot of stuff to try to keep people like myself to understand that what we're going through. Sometime of year, when you had a stroke, there's a lot of things that you don't understand unless you've sort of been there. And each one is different. So it's a very, really thing. So there's a lot of stuff go back east in Ontario, for example. They have a beautiful program. They have a lot of stuff going on in Ontario. British Columbia was one of the big universities, and the British Columbia is with a huge amount of people. The school should be a little bit bigger. The people that myself who have speech problems or a language problem or using numbers or anything else, aphasia, number one, is there should be sort of we can all do it the same, like in the whole country, not just British Columbia, but it should be. The signs that say we're sort of these little signs that I have, like you can talk back and forth to each other. So those are things that that we like to I'm pushing to go through. And again, my and the only I could speak pretty good without with a piece of paper, but I don't have the paper and I'm not because it's too hard to read. So I'll let you go and thank you much for your help and thank you very much. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Number 14. Good afternoon. My name is Bill Conway. I'm a provincial director at the Canadian Council of Blind BC Yukon Division and chair of the Accessible Advisory Committee for the District of Seychelles, where I reside. I'd like to switch a little bit of the topic here from speech and interpretation to independence guidance. using guide dogs and service animals. I've been using my left-hand partner, not this one, but for over 40 years. One of the barriers that we may face when we come back into Canada or going through any type of customs services, whether it be in a courthouse or within airport systems, is that we have been asked, we the guide dog users, have been asked upon occasion to one, take the leash off the dog, or two, take the harness off the dog, and or three, remove the collar. What happens then? Free time for the puppy. Last time when I come home with my recent puppy up my left-hand side here, just 4 months ago, the very first thing I was asked, stepping my foot into my country of Canada, was that please hold, we must scan your dog. Unfortunately, I will not allow that because I have no idea how my dog may or may not react towards a scanning mechanism, i.e. a wand or a dog barker. And these are very scary. When we are trained at schools in the United States of America, CNI Incorporated in Morristown, New Jersey, we are highly instructed or informed that these dogs should not be scanned, their leashes should not be removed, their harnesses stay on their body, and their collars around the neck. That is for our protection and the dog's safety, and our safety too. Because I don't want my dog running free in the airport. Have fun with him. So what I'm looking for, Madam Minister, is that when we come into Canada, whether you have a service dog, a certified service dog from a certified school, and or a certified guide dog that comes from a certified guide dog school, there's four in Canada, and a measly 16 to 20 schools in the United States of America that trains these left-hand partners of mine. So I'd like to see some type of rule and or regulation that indicates that customs cannot touch our dogs or ask us to remove any of its uniform, i.e. leash, harness, collar. Because our dogs are full of metal. The harness is full of metal underneath this leather. His collar is definitely metal, and there's about four pieces of metal on his leash that I can count so far, and they're all very sets off alarms. So that's what I'm looking for, Madam Minister, and I think it will assist all service animals, and especially all guide dogs and CNI dogs in our country of Canada. Thank you.
Thank you. Number 15.
Hi, my name is Nicole, and I am an autistic person. I will make a few general remarks, and then I will make some remarks specific to autism. So my general remarks are that, yes, Canada may have ratified the UN Convention of Rights of Persons with Disabilities, but, and there has been an online petition about this very recently, is that Canada has not signed a necessary document that is required to start implementing that convention, which would then hold the country accountable to obeying those standards in that convention. So really, you have ratified, but you have not implemented yet, and that is a big problem. In British Columbia, they talk about this province being the most accessible, but I would beg to differ in a very important way. The persons with disabilities rate is very, very low. It's among the lowest, if not the lowest rate in Canada. And if you consider housing, $375 for shelter still. And yet, BC is probably the province with the most foreign donations of any province in this country. The housing market is the most inaccessible in all of this country for this particular province. So yeah, housing is a big issue overall, but especially more so for people with disabilities, and I'm on disability assistance, so I can speak very well to how this is very difficult for housing, but overall having that very low rate, which is very ridiculous, but that's the way things are in BC specifically. Now, for autism, there are certain attitudes that act as barriers, and one of which was actually illustrated beautifully, which I didn't intend that to be, but one of the earlier comments was about how autism is treatable, and this is from staff in Autism Society of BC, which is one of the largest and well-known autism-specific organizations in BC. They talk about how autism is treatable, when that is nowhere near the case. It is not a disease. It's not something to be cured. It's not productive to quest for a cure for autism. It really isn't something that should be taken away. We're shameful to have. That's wrong. It is none of those things. So again, autism is not treatable, and we should not be wanting a cure for that condition. Related to that is another barrier is the speech language pathologist community. They talk about communication disabilities, and I very recently had some experience with a speech language pathologist, and unfortunately that community excludes people that are autistic, especially ones like me, because we do not have a cognitive impairment. We do not have brain injury or clinically significant language delay, like with aphasia or learning disabilities. At least people like me who are very cognitively able, who are even verbal, but who have significant difficulties with social skills, which are very essential to communication. So we may have none of these other quote-unquote disabilities, so the SLPs do not count us as those people because we don't have a speech impairment, and so that is one thing I really want to emphasize. And I'll end with a question that I have for all of you, is that how broad do you define a disability? Because autism is a disability, but not in any other ways you might think as a typical disability. Thank you.
Thank you. Number 16 is right there, I think.
Hi, my name is Ed Boulier. I'm here with my husband, Remy Castonguay, and my second daughter. And, and we are here, I think, mostly to represent our first daughter, Natasha, who is 5 years old today. Thank you for all the people are here, and I'm humbled by the people who have been working toward accessibility and inclusion for so many years. For us, it has been a long, short road, but a very difficult one. I have one general idea that I want to put forward, and 3 points, each of which come with examples. But they all written down on this one single page, so I think I will get through. So when I think about my daughter, what I want most for her is equal opportunity for her to develop her full potential as an individual and as a member of society. And there are three ideas that I think would really help us as a family to make her achieve this. The first one, and they're all related to difficulties that we've encountered since she has been born. The first one is that services that are given to people who need them should be available based on needs rather than diagnosis. One of the barriers we faced was our use of sign language to communicate with her. She's 5 years old and she's still nonverbal, and she's been nonverbal since for a long time, for many reasons, one of which that she was on the ventilator for the first 2 years and a half of her life. And everywhere where we wanted to fight for her to have a right to use sign language, which seemed to be a good way for us to communicate with her, we've been limited in our access to these services because she is not deaf or hearing impaired. And so I think one strategy would be to make sign language available to anybody who can benefit from it and make it widely available as an option for second language so that you can talk with other people with it. Another dare you.
All right, so we're back on the Community Living Show. Very interesting topics along the way. And maybe we can talk about that when we take a break, all right?
All right.
We'll be back in a moment. This is Community Living Show. Michael Rubin with me, Kelly Rayburn. We will be back in a moment.
The Global Accessibility Awareness Day is on the third Thursday of May of every year. The community and campus stations across Canada are hosting inclusive radio about accessibility, self-advocacy, adapted technology, and more. Contact your local stations to find out more.
Want to know what's up at UBC? Read the UBC. It's only the largest student newspaper in Western Canada, and it's written and edited entirely by UBC students. The UBC is your source for on-campus news, culture, and sports. New editions come out every Monday and Thursday. For breaking news as well as amazing videos and blogs, check out ubc.ca.
From Russia, weekly punk rock radio show on CITR, presented to you by Stomp Records from Montreal. Every Tuesday at 10:30 a.m. on 101.9 FM.
Hello, and welcome back to the Community Living Show on the NCRE Radio Networks. Michael Rubin here with Kelly on the controls. We were talking about issues on disability accessibility legislation. And any final thoughts for it before we begin finishing up?
Well, it sounds like there some of the things I thought that were brought up in this, I had no idea weren't already in a legislation. It's like, especially about the guide dogs, it's like, that was kind of interesting. And it should be in legislation that, hey, you don't need to search a guy's guide dog.
Well, true. You know? And he mentioned that, you know, if you were to take up the harness, take up the stuff, then it's, you know, leisure time for the dog.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, yeah. I've known people that have trained guide dogs and it's like, and the rule of thumb was, if the harness is on, dog is working.
Yes.
Harness is off, hey, it's okay. Dog's relaxing. It's free time,
yeah.
You know?
Leisure time. And stuff.
Yeah, so. It's like.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. So. And then there was some stuff on autism, too. So it's very interesting topics. All right. So back with more accessibility legislation. We will be back in a moment.
With muscular dystrophy, which is her diagnosis, would receive less therapy services than a child with another type of diagnosis. One thing that we've faced here in British Columbia that is really dismal is the availability of service for speech-language pathologists. My daughter entered kindergarten this year. End of November, she has not been able to see a speech-language pathologist. Actually, we were told that so few that she will probably never have a one-on-one session with a speech and language pathologist, and that she would only consult with her teacher. And I think that is completely unacceptable. So one strategy for this barrier would be that therapy services are provided on an individual, based on individual needs, as assessed by not only specialists, but in collaboration with the person that needs those services and their caregivers. My second point has to do with support services for inclusion, which should be available without delay. And for a child, that is extremely important, as much as for other people, but maybe even more so because there's so much that they can learn and benefit from, and delay means that their full potential will actually be reduced. So one of the barriers that we've faced is the lack of funding in accessing childcare or after school care. There's currently a more than 2 years wait list just for this funding to give support for these children to be integrated into childcare. And this is also
that was the 4 minute buzzer.
Okay.
So if you could just
so creating a sufficient number of spaces with funding already in place would be a solution for this. My third point has to do with services and resources that need to be made available without creating a burden to the family and the caregivers. There are two barriers, a huge amount of paperwork that we have to fill that really prevent us to and jeopardize our ability to provide for our child and to be productive member of society. And often funds are not accessible because we might not meet some kind of threshold when the cost of the specialized care that we need is not taken into account. So that we are much poorer than we might seem to be on paper. And I think that could be changed with deciding how funds are allocated. And that would come from the federal government. So thank you very much.
I might have missed a number. Was that 17? Well, right there. Okay, thank you. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Quattro, and everybody here. My name is Aaron Piedras. I am 21 years old, and I currently reside in Westminster, B.C. Some of you may not know that. Okay. I take the hangout now on a regular basis. I've been doing that now for the past, year? 2 years. And what I've seen recently is that I've had to wait a long time for hangouts to come, and I'm frustrated by that, you know? So what I want the government to do is get more hangouts to more pages, especially for me, because I'm not happy about it whatsoever, you know? And,
Thank you.
Number 18.
Hi, I'm Alexander Magnuson. I just wanted to first of all, thank you for having me. And Ms. Quattro, I have something to tell you. And this is directed to you. I have two main things that I want to do. One, I think that you should hire me, because I think the lack of people with autism that is in government, I think is severely lacking, and I think that I'm enough of a smart mouth to be able to take it on. And two, I think that there should be a big difference between welfare checks and disability checks. And also the stigma. I'm on disability, and I know that some people go, "Oh, it's Welfare Wednesday, you get paid," and I'm like, it's shameful. The only reason why I'm on disability is because, and we can argue this, I have no problem, is that the government of Canada is making a lot of us, including myself, more disabled. And I'll tell you why. My disability, as you can see, is invisible. I have autism. But if you saw me walking down the street having an autistic meltdown, you would think that I was crazy, psychotic, and all of those things. And believe me, police have been called, and I've been in psych wards, and then they go, "Well, what is he doing here? Oh, well, he's crazy." And then, weeks later, because believe it or not, when I have severe anxiety, I am not able to speak. So I wear this now proudly, but so think of it, I have no way to communicate in a new city. I live in South Surrey, so if I'm downtown Vancouver, which I'd never do because I would be way too scared that that would happen, so again, disables me more. I stay home a lot, or I go out with people that I very much trust, which is very few people, so again, the outer world is making me more disabled than I actually am. So back to my thing is, people need to realize that invisible disabilities are very much here, and again, hire me, because I gotcha. And also I want to say to the other two people that said something about autism, one, the young lady, I absolutely am so 100% with you. You're amazing. The mother, I won't go on and on and on, because I do speeches about having autism for a living, so I could go on and on and on, but I would really like you, I think you were number 3 or 4, to come and talk to me, because I have a lot to say. Okay, I'm going to stop before, but yeah, hire me.
Okay, number 19 I'm looking for.
I'm number 19.
Okay.
My name's Danielle Burns, and I rely on public buses, and what I see a lot is a lot of people won't move when a wheelchair or stroller comes off, and they'll fit there, and a lot of buses are not, a lot of them have these big, bulky wheelchairs, and it's not effective. I can put an example. Last night I was out with a friend of mine in a movie theater. There was wheelchair accessory, but they had to take up. My friend's got a worker, and so in the movie theater there was like a wheelchair accessory, but so many fun things would like to be more accessory for wheelchairs. And what's the point of going on the sidewalk or when there's a big curb? Wheelchairs can't go over that. Unless you have a big, powerful wheelchair. But this is just my opinion, so make it more accessible and maybe make the more streets and sidewalks, especially in South Surrey, Rife Rock, and the beaches are not accessible. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Number 20? Number 20, right here.
All right, hold that thing close. I came up to the front because I know people in wheelchairs can't all turn their heads around 360 degrees. I couldn't see other people in the back. It's great to see a lot of people here because what we need is strength in numbers.
Here, here.
Woo! I hire people to work for me to assist me. Doing what you would, well, let's see, what all of you, but what many people need no help to do. Brush teeth, make dinner, make breakfast, dress, bathe, wash, whatever, right? If you don't hire people or need people to help you to do that, I'm sure you know somebody that does, or know somebody that knows somebody that knows somebody that does. Everybody in this province knows somebody that somebody that somebody that somebody, somebody does. Okay, we need to tell our minister here and our MPs that we, as people with disabilities that hire people to assist us, need the same access to the, and actually a special exemption, to the foreign worker program that myself and many, many people have for many years depended on to bring caregivers into Canada when Canadians do not want to do the job. And I don't blame the Canadians for not wanting to do the job. When I was growing up, my ambition in life was not to be a caregiver or a person with disabilities. However, there are wonderful people that are happy to come to this country and do that job for a reasonable wage, which, until Harper made his changes in 2014, was minimum wage. And I'm not saying minimum wage is a lot, but if you are provided with a place to stay and comfortable surroundings and a pleasant family environment, well, maybe it's getting more reasonable. And what we were put in the position of being after 2014, some changes in 2011 applied as well, is basically being in a position where we cannot hire a temporary foreign worker to assist us unless we pay $17 or more an hour. Depends on where you live, etc. It's related to a national occupation classification code, which as a solution to corporate abuses and other abuses by some people who hire nannies, we are forced as people with disabilities into having to put up with the restrictions of that program. But not only that, but listen to this. A study was done in May to address the needs of all stakeholders in the temporary foreign worker program. That is, anybody that could benefit from foreign workers. Corporation, professional bodies, agricultural organizations, unions, whatever, were consulted. No people with disabilities were consulted at all. Take a look at the report. It's available publicly. I have a letter here. You can use it if you want. You can go to my website if you want. I suggest our minister looking very closely. I'm really glad. That's wonderful, but let's all get together and talk to everybody you know and tell them of the importance of this and let them know whether
all right, so we're going to have to leave it there. But you kind of get the picture anyways.
Yeah. There was a lot of, broad issues that I hadn't thought of.
Right.
You know, and some of them I don't. Some of I question maybe should they be included or should they not be included in the broad spectrum of a legislation for inclusiveness and accessibility. I don't know. You know.
So what do we have for our next week's show? You're doing in progress.
I'm trying to push forward with maybe. Getting a few interviews in with people who need affordable housing and things like that, because it's still a really big issue. And it's like a lot of people that are homeless on the streets, they're not homeless because of addictions or anything like that. They're homeless because they have a disability, and we need to get to the bottom of that and get these folks help because you know so they don't have to live on the streets, especially you know. I mean, people think, oh well, it's summertime. Winter comes and it's minus what out there right now?
7 last night. So
yeah, so you know,
it's very cold.
It's a fixable thing.
Okay. So. If you like what you hear, please support us. Email us, communityliving radio@gmail.com. Thank you very much, Michael, for having us. And again, please sure to tune us next week on our show, of course, our holiday show. And that is it. Thank you for listening to us. And please stay tuned for upcoming NCRA Reno Network stations, programs, for that matter. Have a great day, and we'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.
Bye. Push me, draw me close to
Down with my